quite one-fourth, and never just half, but the entirety of one primate, whole. It is the part of a story, an idea that means more to you than me. Hello and welcome to Full Gorilla Life. We are Jeremy Keene,
Larry Medina,
and Corey Hewlings.
Each week, we will break down an important life concept or talk with an inspiring person so that you can live your full gorilla life.
All right, everybody, welcome back to our podcast. Today, we welcome Nick Varola of Varola Media, badass videographer, right? Many different hats. But Nick, before we get into getting to know you and your path and how we got to how you got to where you're at, Jeremy's going to run you through the Gorilla Gauntlet.
All right, Nick, you ready? Usually say rapid fire. Doesn't always happen that way. We let it go where it goes. Number one, married, single, or dating?
Married.
Any children?
One on the way.
Oh, congratulations. Right on.
Yeah.
Boy or girl?
Girl. Oh.
Wait. Girl?
So they,
yep, girl. Late July,
so
due date.
Did you do a gender release?
Reveal.
What's it called?
Reveal.
Yeah, thank you. Gender reveal?
No.
Because I feel like you could have done like an epic video.
Hey, yeah, we have no time.
You could have done like a helicopter.
I completely agree with this. Don't do the gender reveal. I did the same thing. I refused to succumb to what society says I'm supposed to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, everybody did these gender reveals, and my mom's like, "Are you gonna have a gender reveal party?" I said, "No. I'll tell you what it is after we go to the doctors."
Right.
Exactly. I'll do it in a group text.
Yeah, I actually did do it in a group text. I group text everybody.
That's a reveal.
Hey,
he's revealed
for you.
Hey, everybody. All right. Either FB, you say rapid fire, but it never happens that way.
Sure.
Next question. iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Okay. Favorite movie or book or both?
Ooh. Gotta go with Star Wars. Just all around. It's been like my jam since I was a kid.
What's your favorite one? If you had to watch one of them, what was the one you'd watch?
Ooh, probably Return of the Jedi.
Yes, that's my favorite too. Right on. All right, beer, whiskey, or wine?
Ooh, that's tough. All of the above. Depends on what day it is.
Well, you're in Tennessee right now, so you got to go whiskey, right?
That's true. That's probably what I'll be having at dinner.
You have to. You almost have to, I feel. I started a documentary that I need to finish. It's called Neat. It's about bourbon.
Is it on that one?
Netflix?
It's on Hulu. That I saw it on
Hulu. There's also one, I don't remember the name of it, but it's on, I think it might be bourbon. It's on, I think it's on Amazon. I forget the name though.
I gotta watch that. I've been working my way through some of the higher end bourbons lately, so trying to learn a little about that. So it'd be good to watch.
Okay. What is the your favorite bourbon so far?
Right now,
you have one?
On the higher end stuff, I like Blanton's, and that's great if you can find it. On more mid shelf, Jefferson's has kind of been my go to.
Okay. We just got some early times that we mail ordered, which sounds kind of weird for me, but we just got those in. A good one that is like around the $60 for the bottle is Old Forester Prohibition. It's good. That's a good one.
I gotta try that.
Yeah, it's a good one. But anyways.
It's not next to Fireball, so I don't know what that.
This is true. Yeah, King's a big fireball.
I've branched out on my cinnamon whiskey. See, there's a difference. All right. Favorite genre of music?
That is always evolving, but I've kind of been listening to a lot of blues and jazz lately. So kind of always evolving.
Okay. So as far as like blues, is it like Gary Clark blues, or are you talking about like because even like John Mayer, right? John Mayer's a blues guy too.
Yeah.
Pop, but he, yeah, kind of. You know, so I'm just trying to figure out.
Like, Was that, did that answer your question there?
like rescue truck?
He's like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, kind of, not anyone in particular. I've kind of been just listening to what Pandora serves up to me. And I'm just like, you know, I like this station a lot. So, yeah, I've just been
Black Keys. I love Black Keys.
Okay. Yeah, that's been coming on a lot. I like the Marsalis family for kind of some of the old school stuff.
Yeah. Agreed.
So, what do you drive?
I'm driving a Jeep Wrangler right now.
We're going to appreciate that. You used to have one too, didn't you? I guess any car we say you buy had one.
Two-door or four-door?
Four-door. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good vehicle.
I used to love the Wranglers, but since they came out with the four-door, I was like, I don't want nothing else but the four-door now.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of for me, it's a balance. I love the classic Jeep thing, but I need space for all my production gear and everything. So it's kind of a compromise.
I gotcha. Yeah, I like the way the four-door looks better, honestly. I think it looks more proportionate.
Yeah, no. So the question is reservation or just walk-in?
Walk-in.
All right. My kind of guy.
Yeah.
Favorite type of food?
Ooh, that's tough. I've had so much good food. I'd say classic go-to would probably be Mexican. And I'm feeling a little fancy than sushi.
Okay. All right.
Sushi is fancy. Mexican, not fancy. Okay.
No, it shouldn't. It shouldn't. If it's good, it shouldn't
about be. The mood. I spent years working in fishing TV, so I've gotten a lot of really fresh sushi. So that kind of put it on the menu for me.
Okay.
Now, you're in Nashville, so have you tried any of that Gus's World Famous Fried Chicken? There's got to be one in Nashville.
I had a hot chicken sandwich. I don't think it was from Gus's, but it was really good. I know it was that classic hot chicken here in Nashville, and I was pretty impressed. So. I think we're gonna have some barbecue tonight.
Where did you get your hot chicken from?
You know, I'm not sure. I was shooting, and they sent somebody out to get us all sandwiches. So yeah, I'm not sure exactly where they got it.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. So yeah, that's all of the Gorilla Gauntlet that we have. Yeah, that's it. So yeah, so Nick, if you don't mind, maybe just give us a little path, right? So I we're kind of talking before this. And you were talking about you graduated back in 2007?
Yep, 07, Vero Beach High School.
Vero Beach High School. And then what happened after that?
From there, I went to UCF, did 4 years, majored in marketing, minored in finance. Had an internship right after that with a wealth management firm. And I did that for 6 months and, didn't hate it, but also didn't love it. Moved back to Vero, took a job as a marketing director for a construction company, and did that, I'd say, probably 4 or 5 months. And that's kind of when I started doing video production on the side. And it got to a point where I was kind of doing all my projects on the weekend, and I was doing better financially on the weekends with my video production job than I was during the week with my business job. And so I kind of just decided in 2011 to go full-time into the video side and drop everything else, and that's kind of when I pulled the trigger on it.
So let's talk about that for a second, right? So you're working as a marketing director for because you had a degree in marketing as well as finance.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of training did you have for video editing?
Well, rewinding back to high school, I was in the TV production class there, and it kind of didn't relate to anything else I was doing. I just thought it was really cool. So I was kind of getting exposed to all that through that. Going back even further, my parents had a photography company when I was growing up, and I just always had a camera in my hands and was always shooting little, stupid movies with my friends and putting stuff together. So, before that, it was just always kind of fun. It honestly never dawned on me that I could make a career out of something that I just love doing. And it was probably a little silly of me, but later on I figured, I guess there's kind of a demand for this. So, yeah.
Now, have you seen demand, speaking of that, have you seen the demand grow over time, do you think?
How
many people, you know, businesses shooting videos and stuff like that, YouTube, other platforms?
It's been huge. I mean, the I'd say probably in 2015, 16 is really when, you know, social media was kind of becoming the big marketing platform. And, you know, small businesses were realizing that they had a way to market their business to local and, you know, not local customers and clients in a way that, you know, had never been possible. But before that, it was basically, you know, your clients would be a business showing up, wanting you to shoot a company video. They'd sit everybody down in the boardroom for 10 minutes and watch, you know, a long video. And that was kind of, you know, the need for video was things like that. Or they were going to some big advertising company to make their 30-second spot. They'd be spending $20,000 with Comcast on to run in certain markets. And I'd say social media kind of brought about the change of, you know, a small business being able to just make a video, put it online with a small budget and reach, you know, thousands of people and be able to measure their results with it too, as far as the analytics. And that, I'd say, really is what kind of caused the storm that really opened up all the demand. And that's been, it's been really great for me.
So have you done a lot of that for like small businesses, like social media?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, my local work that I do there in Indian River County is almost entirely advertising and marketing productions. You know, I do a lot for charity work as well, as far as, you know, doing fundraising videos and things for, you know, fundraising events and galas and things like that. But most of my business really is small and medium-sized businesses that want to advertise on social media or, you know, just build a following with some type of content. And it's never the same thing. So yeah, it's usually pretty unique.
And content's so weird, right? Because like it's hard to come up with consistent content, at least for, you know, that's one thing that I see out there is like just trying to keep something relatable. Like that's, it's not easy to continuously try and drive home a message, right? For a lot of folks. So What kind of direction would you give for somebody who's trying to, you know, give that grind?
Well, you know, that's where the schooling I did have in the time that I did with my marketing degree, that's really where that kind of plays in. You know, I'd say, you know, I say that the video doesn't happen on the camera. It happens in your mind. And that's when I sit around the table with people and try to essentially figure out, you know, who are they? And, you know, first off, you know, kind of run through the basic marketing stuff. You know, who's your demographics? Who are you trying to reach? What's your brand image? You know, what are you trying to sell with this video? And once we kind of get a good handle on that, and you'd be surprised how many small business owners have trouble answering that question. Like they've never thought about, you know, who is my company as, you know, as a brand. And I tell people, try to think of your business as a person. You know, what's its personality? You know, who's it friends with? Who relates to it? And I think that's kind of a good way to start jogging people's brains a little bit and thinking in that mindset. And then once we get there, we can kind of figure out what their goals are with each video or with a campaign. And then we can kind of go from there and get into the specifics of, all right, let's turn that into a story and something that not only gives this message, but entertains the viewer. And that's kind of the process I follow. And then we kind of get it down on paper. And then once it's on paper, I kind of.
Yep.
You back?
Yep.
Yep. We lost.
We had you.
Once it's on paper. Yeah, we had you.
Five.
But yeah, no, you said once they have it on paper.
Yeah. Once we have it on paper, you know, that kind of helps us navigate what the video is going to be. And then it's just a matter of checking off the boxes.
Okay. All right.
So that's what you do local, but you're obviously you travel a lot too,
well,
right?
But before we get into that though, do you remember your first gig locally?
That's a great question. I don't remember my very first gig. It was probably, I think it might have been a restaurant. There was like a vegan restaurant, I think, somewhere that wanted to do something. I don't think they've been around for a long time, but yeah.
Are you laughing because animals eat their, you know,
right?
Anyway,
yeah. But I'd say my first big client was Triton Submarines. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but they're based out of Sebastian.
That's awesome.
So you did an advertisement video for them?
Actually, they found me first online and just had me come in and shoot a little interview. I think it was something that they were sending to some British production company that basically just needed a little interview with their CEO. Just went in, shot that. It was probably a half hour, 45 minute thing, but they liked what I did. So then they called me out and had me come on a week excursion with them to the Bahamas. And that's kind of where, you know, I really got into all the
stuff. You're like,
I think that's actually why I bought my first drone, was for that gig. And
you're like, I can do this.
I had no idea what I was doing at that point, but I guess I did all right with it.
That's awesome. Now the excursion, what does that entail?
Out of it.
Sorry, Jeremy, go ahead.
No worries. Go ahead. Go ahead, Larry.
So, yeah, the excursion, basically, you know, a test drive of a car. People that buy submarines kind of want a test drive, too. So they'll take out their new submarines, and basically it's their sea trials, test drives. You know, they'll bring out people that are considering buying one. So that was basically it. They were doing a bunch of dives, and I came out and filmed that whole process. And I think we turned it into like a 90-second commercial for them that was kind of just about their company and what they do. And they use that, I think, at some boat shows and on their social media, and kind of went from there.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
It was really cool. That was my first travel gig.
I wonder what that Facebook group looks like, where that video goes. You know, because Facebook is like targeted advertisement, Google. Mm-hmm. Like, who's? Because I never saw that video. They weren't advertising to me.
Well,
I'd like to know that people that got to see that advertisement. Like,
start talking about submarines on like near your phone, and then they might start showing up.
Let's try that. Certain type of people that are in the market for $5 million submarines.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it either, other than
unfortunately,
editing it.
I didn't get to see that commercial.
That's awesome. So, was it going down? Obviously, you got to go into the sub and go underwater, right?
Yeah, I think on that trip, I dove down to 3,300 feet in that submarine, and it was incredible. Yeah, 1,100 meters. So
I didn't know they go that deep. Like, I didn't know those like little ones went that
deep.
Oh well, that was in 2014. Their latest sub, which I've got a documentary production coming up next month that's actually featuring one of their subs. So they've made the only submarine that can go to the bottom of the ocean and unlimited to the deepest point in the ocean, which is I want to say 33,000 feet or thereabouts.
Who's testing that one?
That one has been tested already. Actually, Discovery's got a documentary coming out that I've done a couple shoots for that last year they went to each of the deepest points in all the five oceans, and that documentary is called The Five Deeps. It'll be out on Discovery in the summer. If you want to see that, that'll be interesting. We're going to dive the Challenger Deep, which is the deepest point in the Marianas Trench. Next month we leave, and that'll be really
manned sub. Like somebody gets in that, or is it?
It's manned. Yeah, two person sub. It's a titanium sphere.
I'm not doing it. I'm a risk taker, but I'm not doing it.
I would love to go down. I haven't actually been down in that one. I've done some excursions with them. I actually, right before all the COVID craziness started, I was in Greece with them doing the deepest dive in the Mediterranean. And I filmed that and turned it into a little mini documentary. And then right after that, in early March, we were in Saudi Arabia doing the deepest dive in the Red Sea. And I got back from that March 2nd, and then all the lockdowns and all that kind of stuff started.
Sorry,
Jerry.
No worries.
What was the deepest you ever went in a sub?
That first dive, the 3,300 feet.
Yeah. Jerry, you dive 3,000 in a sub?
Yeah. I'll give it a go.
It'd be fun.
No, thanks.
It'd be fun.
No.
You can try
and do a takeoff, no landing. Or you're gonna land, but it's gonna be an awful landing. But you wouldn't do a dive? That doesn't make any sense.
I trust myself, all right? Somebody built that submarine.
All right, so Nick, listen. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. So Corey, all right. So he's talking trash on like saying like he won't go 3,000 feet. You know,
no,
below sea.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'll still do it. It'll be fun.
Tomato, so, tomato.
Yeah, yeah. Tomato, tomato. All right. It's an extra. So, but Corey claims that he wants to learn how to fly a plane off of YouTube.
Like learn how to all fly. Right. He wants to teach himself how to fly.
I can. All right.
So, yeah, you can. I don't think that you can stick
we'll
a
landing.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with that.
Honestly, the more I've thought about it, Corey, the more I've thought about it, I feel like you probably could. I feel like, you know, I've got a little more faith in you the more I've thought about it.
Hey, Nick, do you want to have a cool documentary?
Yeah. Hey, I hope it's the one-seater.
No. I'll go up with you. I'll go with you.
It's saying.
Yeah.
Let's
do it. Like that rocket, man.
So, Nick, back to what you were saying. So you've done some footage. You've been filming footage for this Discovery Education documentary. It's coming out in July, you said?
They haven't put out the firm release date yet.
Summer,
as far as I know so far. So, yeah, it should be imminently, I would guess.
Yeah. So how do you get hooked up with Discovery?
Well, that was actually later down the line with Discovery. First, going back to 2014, I got my first gig in TV, which was going to Mexico and filming a show called Destination Baja Sur. And it was basically a fishing and travel TV show. And we went from all the way at the tip of North Baja and drove all the way down over 6 weeks to South Baja and where Cabo is, and we filmed episodes along the way at different fishing villages, and that was my first introduction to outdoor TV, and that was for NBC Sports. And then I met another producer that does a show called Local Knowledge, which is a Discovery show, and I started working with them the following year, and that was the first show I did with Discovery.
So how did you get that gig? Like, were you the only videographer for that one?
No. On Local Knowledge, it was me, another cameraman, and a specialty footage guy that basically did like underwater and drone stuff. And we basically, and then there was two hosts, and so it was basically like a 5-man crew on the.
Okay.
So did you go looking for that gig, or did they come find you?
I didn't go looking for it. We kind of just crossed paths and, you know, I guess networking type stuff. But we actually met briefly down in Baja. You know, they were also doing kind of the same thing we were doing. They were filming a TV show down there. And we just happened to cross paths. And then from there, I'd say it was about a year, maybe 6 months to a year. And then we just kind of connected on Facebook. They needed someone to come out and shoot in San Diego with them, and kind of went out, shot with them. And then, you know, from there, I think I did probably 10 more episodes with them after that. And then I spun off into another of the same production company's shows, and, you know, did a couple seasons of that. And, so it's just, you know, it's a really interesting industry in that, you know, you meet a couple people, a couple producers, and, you know, years might go in between talking to people, but every once in a while you'll just get a call to cover something, and then you cover it, and you know, it just kind of
works. Are you working for like a production company at that point, or are you working for Discovery? Are you like a 1099 employee, or
For those, it's basically essentially freelance. Like, so okay. I'm working for the production company when I work on those type of productions, and then I'm coming home and sending the footage off to an editor they have somewhere else. And then I watch it on TV like everybody else.
Okay. So you don't have to edit it or anything like that. You just literally just have to shoot it then, right?
Yeah, on those it's great. Yeah. I shoot it and FedEx the drive out at the end.
Yeah. Is that the best way to do it?
I have to pre-produce it, shoot it, edit it, you know, all that stuff. So it's just a different type of beast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way easier.
Yeah,
it's the fun stuff, right? I would assume for you that would be the fun part of it, is the shooting part of it, right?
Yeah, it depends. It depends on the project. I really enjoy editing too. You know, I feel like creativity, you know, I guess it's hard to say both sides of it. You have to kind of be creative and in a certain mindset. But I feel like editing is really interesting if it's an interesting project. You know, sometimes editing is just, you know, getting through it.
But, brutal. Yeah, yeah, cool, especially project, if it's a long one.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's a long one, it's always like to me, like if I'm editing something, if it's a long one, as I'm getting close, I become real anxious. Mm-hmm. To just be done with it, and then I'm at that point I'm like, it's either gonna be really crappy or I need to walk away because it's gonna be
I've
had a lot of like 14 to 16 hour editing days, and like by the end it's just like it's time. Wow.
If I get 2 hours into editing, I'm like, oh my gosh, I gotta walk away. I can't.
Yeah,
I can't. Like 2 hours,
14 16 hours of anything is too much. Sitting there editing, I'm sure it just kind of starts to blur.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm full sure. Yeah. So in Nashville, are you shooting something now?
Yeah, actually, this is a Discovery show. It's right now I'm shooting. It's If We Built It Today is the name of the show, and it's basically, you know, they take classic buildings and things that, you know, were built historically, and then it's essentially answering the question: if we built it today, what would it take? How would we do it? Like the one I'm working on right now is on the Parthenon. And so here in Nashville in Centennial Park, they have a recreation of the Parthenon that was built in the late 1800s and then turned into a permanent structure in the early 1900s. So I was out there filming with them all day and, you know, started off with the museum director and then with the historian. And then with a sculptor that, you know, did a lot of the sculpting work. And then we'll finish off tomorrow with a couple more academics and, you know, talking about the historical components and stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's and really then Thursday, cool. Actually, another one of them is on the Titanic. And so I'm kind of doing a fill-in segment for them at the...
So we heard that you're doing an extra with Titanic and then I think it went out.
Yeah. So Thursday, I'm just doing a little shoot to fill in one of their other episodes. It's actually a Canadian production company that I'm working for this week. So, yeah.
Okay. That's pretty awesome, man.
So, yeah. You travel a lot then?
Yeah, a good bit. Last year, I was on the road about 6 months total. And yeah.
So, do you think that's going to change with the kid?
Yeah, I'd like it to. I think now I'm probably getting away from TV, and I'll probably more so work more towards having the documentary side of things, because they're more, you know, go get it done and then it's done, whereas the TV tends to be kind of a, you know, go come back. So yeah, I'd like to kind of maybe take 4 or 5 projects a year, you know, that's a week or 2 weeks a piece. And then kind of be home for the rest of it. So I think that's kind of the projection going forward, you know, as the little one comes along.
So when you do the documentary, are you doing all the editing and everything then at that point?
This particular one. So yeah, well, next week or not next week, June 1st, I've got to be in Guam, and that will be the start of this next one. That'll basically be a 4-part documentary. And, that one I'm completely, you know, in charge of. I'm directing, producing, shooting, editing. So yeah, it's going to be a pretty big handful. But what's great about that one is that will give me, you know, the freedom to basically, I'll be gone for 2 months straight, June 1st to July 25th. Once I get back from that, I'll be pretty much at home for the rest of the year. So I won't have to take any other travel gigs. So that'll be really nice, but I will have my hands full with editing. So
What's the documentary that you're doing there in Guam?
That'll be the one. We're first off, we're going to the Challenger Deep and the Marianas Trench, and we're doing some of the record dives, and we're taking down some really interesting people on that one who I'm not supposed to really talk about.
Sure.
But that'll be really interesting. And then we come back for a couple days to Guam, and then we take out a second crew that'll be more science-based. And that one will be doing some data collection and samples from the bottom of the ocean. So there'll be more of a science aspect to that. And then the third one, I can't really say too much about it, but we'll be looking for some stuff that's been lost for a long time at the bottom of the ocean, and seeing if we can find it. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that sounds... new era stuff. Is that for Discovery too, or is that for?
This one hasn't yet been pitched and picked up, so we're gonna kind of make this one, and then it'll be pitched. We're thinking that a streaming will probably be the best bet for this particular series, so we'll probably be going after like Netflix and Amazon Prime,
That'd be your awesome. Production company? Are you like a partner of that then, or how does that?
Yeah, happen? that one's basically the. The people organizing the expedition and basically running the whole thing decided it's too big of a story not to make a documentary about. So they just want to go ahead, make it. And then, you know, once it's ready, they'll take it around and pitch it and sell it at that point, which is sometimes, you know, how it works. Sometimes you've got a commission for it, and sometimes you're just making it and then you're commissioning it, you know, later, seeing who will pick it up.
Now, do they still pay you up front, or do you get?
Oh yeah, I'm hired either way. Okay. Essentially, you know, yeah.
I didn't know there was like a partial ownership type of the actual documentary or anything like that.
Yeah, it can be structured that way. On this one, I'm basically, you know, a hired gun. So, you know, okay. I hope it gets picked up. It's great. It's always great on the resume. But,
yeah, because typically they have somebody who finances it, right?
Yeah. Regardless. Usually that would be like the executive producer is basically the person that funds it and then would hire a producer, director like me. And then, you know, it kind of flows down from there. But, yeah, the executive is usually the one that's kind of got the vision for the whole thing and the funding for it.
That's awesome.
So what do you see when you're in a submarine? Like, do you see any, like, weird animals that you'd be like, the hell is that?
Well, what's interesting with that is, you know, I can really only speak from my dive that I did. At like 300 feet, you lose all the light. All the light's gone at that point. So the rest of that 3,000 foot dive looks the same. But most of the life that you're going to see is at the top layer. You know, most things need light to live, right? So once you get down that deep, life is really rare. But if you do see anything, it's pretty interesting and strange. So yeah, it's definitely really interesting. I one of my roles on these camera shoots is with the submarines is to actually pull all the footage from the exterior cameras, and you know, there's definitely some interesting and weird fish that you tend to see on that. But yeah, they're just few and far between down that deep.
So what do you shoot this video with? Like an iPhone or?
A GoPro? What you got? The 8?
Actually, so for the interior of the sub, we do use GoPros. On the exterior of the sub, we use the company's Deep Sea, and they have to be custom made. I mean, no one's built a sub that goes this deep. So before this, no one built the camera that went that deep. But yeah, they are full ocean depth. They can withstand some ridiculous pressure. And it's basically a little tiny camera in a really big housing that keeps the pressure out.
Oh wow! So what do you think of the faux pros?
Well, hey, they have a role. You know, they definitely have a role in small.
Not
small
a very places. Good one.
No, because I'll be honest with you, we use those.
They're not great.
Oh, you mean horror. Like the knockoffs? The
yeah. Faux pros.
Yeah, the fake GoPros.
can't quite trust them. I'd say
they're not very good. For some reason, if you buy four, only three of the mics work.
Yeah, no. If I showed up to a shoot with those, I'd be in trouble.
But what about if you put a sticker over it that said GoPro?
Right,
you're good.
GoPro yeah. Now.
Money.
We'll say we're having a problem with the app on this one.
Yeah, right. Yeah. A little hair on the lens.
Yeah, exactly. So, how are you getting to Guam?
That will be a flight from Orlando to Arizona, and then essentially part of the rules with Guam is that you need to get a test for COVID within 72 hours of landing. So basically they're going to fly in me. There's me, and then there's like 45 other people involved in this between the ship crew, between the sub crew, between, you know, other media people. And basically everyone that goes to Guam has to get that test. So we're all meeting in Arizona. We're all going to go in a batch, get tested, and then we're going to fly out. And I think we go Arizona to Honolulu, Honolulu to Guam. And yeah, so it'll be a lot of flying. It's going to be my first time, you know, traveling like that after all the new, you know, restrictions and everything. So it'll be pretty interesting to see how travel has changed.
Yeah, the part that I think would suck is like I feel like you won't get to experience a true Guam, you know, because everybody will be in isolation, or at least like part of isolation, something, right? It's going to be different than what it would be.
It's definitely going to be different. I just don't know what the situation is going to be. I imagine once we have cleared with the test, I don't think we'll be really on any restrictions. But as far as I know, we're getting there. We're getting on the ship and we're going out to sea. So I probably won't get much Guam time anyways, other than what I see off the
That's true. You know what? That's a good point. Because like when I do go travel, I travel for work. And when I go to a, you know, New York City or whatever, it's not like I get to live out the city or have fun in the city. Like I'm going to work, and then after I go to work, I get some dinner, and then I go to the hotel because I have to finish up some more work typically.
Yeah.
So it's not like you get to experience it. Is that the same for you?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I used to get it all the time, especially when I was working more in the travel TV side. We'd be going to, you know, Baja and fancy, you know, resorts and filming at, you know, in Guatemala at big fishing lodges. And then, you know, we'd be in Jamaica at Sandals Resort doing a fishing tournament and all these crazy places. And everyone's like, wow, man, you're just like, just got back from vacation. Like what you're seeing on screen is not what I'm living. I'm filming the people having fun. I'm actually enjoying that. I mean, a typical day like that, we're up at like 4 a.m., you know, and then we're out to shoot a sunrise. Then we're going till 4 or 5 o'clock. You know, we might get an hour break, and then we're shooting a sunset segment, maybe a cooking segment or something that night. So a lot of those days are like 14-hour days. By the time it's done, we got to go back, recharge batteries, upload cards. And we don't really get much time to do anything else. We're ready to put our heads on the pillow and go sleep at the end of the day.
It's true though, because the first thing you said when you went down the coast of Mexico, like, oh, that's gonna be awesome. And then,
oh yeah,
now you think about it, no, it's just basically more different spots, right? So
yeah for sure, it's not what you think.
So how long? Go ahead, Corey.
Go ahead. Yeah. This is what we get for not recording in a same room. What kind of camera are you using to shoot all that other stuff?
So I pretty much cycle between 3 primary cameras depending on what the gig is. For my corporate and like high-end production work, if it's going to be on TV or if it's going to be on, you know, really anything 4K, I'm filming that with a Red camera, which is basically a cinema camera. Does high frame rates and it's raw footage. It's basically what most of the movies that you see nowadays are shot on, either a Red or an Arri camera. So that's what I use for my really high end production work. That's a big, you know, 20-pound camera, and that's the real deal. And then for most of my travel stuff, I'm actually shooting it on a Canon 1DX Mark II, which is a small compact DSLR camera. And that's what I'll use on like a gimbal for my B-roll and for, you know, the pretty footage. And then for interviews and more, you know, walk and talk ENG style shooting, I'm working on a Canon C200. And then I've always got some GoPros in the bag to put up in interesting places.
So obviously you're a Canon guy over Nikon.
Yeah. Nikon's fine, but I just don't think they have built as much of a market in video. I think they're more photo based. They
do really? Video,
but Canon, like Nikon, doesn't have cinema cameras. Like Canon has a C line, which is like, I use one of their C200s, which is a dedicated film camera. They have more of a base, I guess, in the film community.
Yeah, and I think their menus are a little bit easier than Nikon's.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
typically,
I've never had trouble with their menus. They seem to be real user friendly, and I will say my Canons are by far the most reliable cameras that I have. Like, if I have one camera, I can throw in my bag and go to the Amazon or, you know, wherever I'm going, it's going to be my little Canon.
Yeah, because a Mark II, that's an older camera, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I probably got it. They're on the Mark III now, but it's a workhorse. It's probably 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. It's 4K. It does slow motion. You know, most of the TV shows that I've shot, it's been, you know, the primary B-roll camera. You know, all the Discovery stuff, it's right up there, you know, as a accepted standard for all their specs. So
yeah, I've seen a lot of video guys use the Mark II or the Mark III.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So earlier you're talking about like where you're working 7 days a week. How long did you do that for when you're first grinding?
I mean, I haven't quite fully quit that yet either.
Okay. Right.
This upcoming trip, I'll be going 7 days a week. But I mean,
doing the marketing end.
Yeah, right out of the gate in 2011 is when I fully, you know, it was everything then, because I quit everything else. So I pretty much, it was, you know, eat what I could kill. And that's what I did. You know, it was 7 days a week, you know, long hours. You know, I do now try to have more of a balance to my life. So when I am home, you know, I try to make sure that I, you know, try to take weekends if I can. That's kind of a novel concept to me, but I try to do that. And when we do take vacations, me and my wife, we actually try to take real vacations. We'll try to do one really cool trip a year. Like, we went to Italy a while back, and then just recently, you know, we're like, I've actually brought my wife here to Nashville with me, so she's been out and about enjoying herself. So, you know, when we do travel, we try to make the most of it, and, you know, I try to balance my life like that a little bit.
Yeah, it's easier when you drive, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot better.
Also, she's about 7 months pregnant, so flying's not really on the menu for her anyway.
That's true. It's a good point.
Yeah.
I lost it. I forgot what I was going to say. After all that.
I tell you what, it's been
what do you think of knowing someone's oh, go ahead, Jeremy, sorry.
No, go ahead.
All right, so the question that I have is, right now, right, you see like Jimmy Fallon, and they're doing like stay at home video, and it seems like it doesn't have a good production quality, which I find kind of odd. Right? Like, I find that very odd. Meanwhile, like, there's YouTubers out there that have way better production quality, which like, I can't wrap my head around how do they allow that to go on TV? And I'm not, like, criticizing, because obviously they do a better job than I do, but it just seems weird to me.
I lost you there for a second.
Yep.
But yeah, I think I heard your general question. Like, why is it so awful? Like,
yes.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I'll be honest with you, I think a lot of it's kind of a gimmick. Like, I think they're trying to play it up.
That's what I was thinking.
There's no reason for that. They could ship the guy a nice camera, you know, overnight, and give him 5 steps to set it up, send him a light. You know, there's no reason for it. I think they're just kind of playing up the whole, you know, man on the moon, weird, everything's weird type thing, you know?
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought as well. But I was like, you know, this doesn't make sense, because, like I said, there's YouTubers with GoPros. Like, you can look good with a GoPro.
Yeah. It's all about your lighting, really. Yeah. I think they're just playing into the whole, you know, everyone's out of their comfort zone thing.
Yeah. I remember what I was going to say. So you go on vacation, all right, with your family. What does that look like? Do you always have a camera in your hand?
Nope. Very rarely.
Or are you like, I'm not taking any photos or video?
I try not to.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really try. I'm honestly, like, my cell phone, that's my camera when I'm not working.
Okay.
What about family photos?
Yeah, well, family photos. Yeah, we'll try to organize some little family photos once in a while. Like I said, my parents are photographers too, so if they're along for the trip or whatever, we'll utilize that. We'll take their pictures, they'll take ours, and, you know, we'll try to have sessions to get it out of the way.
I wasn't sure if you're like the mechanic that always has like the broken car, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that applies to photographers.
Yeah. Exactly. That's my point. The long guy.
Didn't right. An example of that. Me and my wife got married in 2016. And I shot, you know, a bunch of video of it and kind of, you know, set cameras up everywhere. And I've had no time to go and edit that. So she's like, you know, maybe for our anniversary this year, you could edit our wedding video. Like, that would be cool. And it's probably not going to happen for a while.
Yeah. Well, I actually videotaped when the digital tape first came out. I reused the digital tape and it did not come out. It was like choppy. Like every other one, I just skipped out.
What do you mean?
So they came out with like digital tapes back in the day, and instead of like CDs where you record onto a CD, it would be like a little small digital tape, and if you reused it, it wouldn't work well. It didn't work well at all. So I actually went to Vegas and we got married. I used it for like a lot of our going out, right? Uh-huh. And it actually, like, every other frame was, like, gone.
Do you still have it?
Yeah, but it's, like, it's garbage. But that's I still have great. It.
That's gold.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, you guys.
The tape days, huh?
Yes. Yeah, well, the digital tape. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It's garbage. You can only use it once, but it's, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my very first camera, was a Canon XL2, and it took those little tapes. Yeah, I remember plugging it in the computer, and you had to play it and just pull it all off. Yeah, it's wow, things have changed a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Now my parents had one that took a little CD, like a miniature CD. I remember, but I don't remember what it was or anything.
I have one of those.
Yeah,
like this little bit, like that big around, yeah. Like small CD. Yeah,
there was a little still period of time where everyone was trying to figure out, you know, digital was a new thing, like who's gonna kind of win this battle of what, you know, the way to do this is, and then, you know, the SD cards kind of came out and beat everything else. And that's kind of been the technology that stuck.
So
basically, do you feel you got your lucky break when you did the excursion then?
Yeah, I'd say that was kind of my first, you know, I did that I could show to other people then after that and be like, you know, here's what I do. And it was, you know, it was able to kind of show a different level of production value than what they were seeing with other people that were kind of doing the same thing. And I feel like that's kind of where, you know, I was able to differentiate what I was doing, and it made a huge difference for me.
That's fantastic, man. That's really cool. Yeah, I mean, you know, it shows though, right? Because I mean, to me, it shows that you did the grind of marketing director, doing the side gigs, and then once you did the side gigs, realizing, oh, you tested the market, there is a market, and then it was doing really well, and then you went on and did, you know, went on your own. Because I have a friend of mine who's a nurse, and he actually does photography as well, but he does like outdoor photography, and he sells like magazines, and he says that his side job makes way more than his nursing job, which I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Just interesting.
It's great. Yeah. It's great when you can do that. I mean, like, you know, earlier we talked about aha moments. I think, you know, for me, it was really when I realized this doesn't have to just be something that I do for fun. There's a market for this and I can make money with it. And then, you know, that was it for me. I was still.
Yeah. That's definitely, I mean, to be able to test the market and take that step with knowing that there's already a market there is definitely, I'm sure, comforting anyways before you quit the 9-to-5 job.
I was pretty sure.
So, yeah. I know you can never be 100%, but yeah, I mean, that's certainly a nice way to be able to take that step for sure.
I remember a lot of people around me were like, this is really crazy, but you're gonna shoot videos?
That's valid to an extent, right? Because like we live in an area where like you wouldn't think that that's possible.
Yeah.
Right. Like we don't live in LA or Miami. It's close enough, but we don't live like in a hot spot. But it just, you know, it just shows that you really could do anything you want if you you know, if you really put your mind to it.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm a big believer in, you know, in this field, that you know, someone that's really got a nose for business and mediocre level of talent will do better than someone that's a super artist, super artsy, creative person, but, you know, doesn't have business sense. I really think, you know, having that business background between, you know, my jobs and education was really the biggest factor for me. You know, I always felt like I was somewhat creative as a kid. I always had that kind of a little bit naturally, but I think just the instinct of being able to sit down with people that have a small business and kind of talk with them and get to the bottom of not just how to make a cool video, but why do you want to make this video? What do you want to do with it? What are your goals? And being able to interpret that into an entertaining video. I think that was kind of what set me apart in the beginning and, you know, helped me kind of get on this whole adventure that I've been on for the last 6 years now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, I want to, you know, ask you, what's one piece of advice that you can impart on our listeners based on your life experience?
I would say that to whatever you do, I mean, it might be cliche, but it's really been true to me in my life. Whatever you do, make sure it's the best that it can be. You know, make sure it's your personal best, but also make sure that it's something that you could be proud of, that you know is going to be impressive to people. And if it's not, keep working at it until it is. I think that's huge. A lot of half-assed stuff gets put out in the world, and I don't think that should happen.
Yeah. We're trying. We are attempting. Okay. Hey.
No, for real, Nick, though, when you do come back, though, from Guam, you got to come into the studio.
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds great.
Be back in the studio.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'd love to talk to you about your trip. Hey, where can people find you at before we let you go?
On Instagram, they can find me at Varola Media Productions. And on Facebook, they can just find me at Nick Varola.
Okay, awesome, man. We appreciate it for sure.
Nick, hang on for
a
second.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you so much. Hang on, though. I want to talk to you about what we talked about earlier real quick.
Okay.
All right.
All right, guys. As always, if you got any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at fullgrowthlife@gmail.com.
And if you want to see what's going on social media, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at fullgrowthlife and on Twitter at GorillaFull.
And last but not least, feel free to visit our website, fullgorilla.life. And please hit subscribe on your podcast app of choice. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a wrap.
Later.
See you.